one of many that we'll have, and would ask that before we get gaveled in, perhaps we could go around and introduce ourselves to both the new chair and the new president, if we haven't, with a little bit of background into your history. So why don't we start with John? We'll go to the left.
Well, I'm John Fallon. I graduated from UAlbany in, 77? I also have a master's degree. Played sports here when I was in college. And, as some people know, there's some stuff here that we have. Been on the council, I guess. I know Pierre said that, but actually I think I was on before, but maybe, whatever.
But it's been about.
The point is, I think it's about
my 16, first dispute that I have.
I think it's about 16 or 17 years it's been, and it's been great. And I know all of you very well, and we welcome you obviously, and hope that this will work out great for all of us, which I'm sure it will. And your reputation is amazing. And Dr. Jones, we're happy to have you here. Obviously, and this is your first meeting, I think. And although we've met a bunch of times, it's still great to see you here. And I really appreciate everything that everyone's been doing here.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jim Clancy. I was appointed by Governor Patterson. I want to say 2009. So this is my first term. Still serving out my term. I'm 1990 graduate of the university. Played sports as well, track and field and cross country, and have been honored to participate in this on this council of very committed, professional, and dedicated professionals, and look forward to continuing working with both of you.
Thank you.
Steve,
Yes, let's move all the way around.
So everybody, Steve Bennett, Vice President of Finance and Business, been on campus since 89, two-time grad, and have worked with the council since my time, it's about 4 years now.
Lee McElroy, been to several council meetings in the 12 years I've been on staff. welcome Michael Casalano to his initial meeting and our president to his initial council meeting.
Same for me, Kathy Herman, Vice President of Communications and Marketing, and I joined the staff just after Lee McElroy because I remember he was on my search committee.
That's right.
Does someone join us other than Dr. Jackson?
Hi, this is Robert Alexandri.
Oh, Rob, okay. Just wanted to be sure.
I apologize to everyone. I got out of the city late. I'm actually on the road, so I'll be there a little bit later. But I'll listen in for as long as I can.
Okay, thank you.
You'll get used to it. Staff to the president. I've been going into my 12th year now. Alumnus of the university. I've been to a few council meetings myself.
I'm Christine Bouchard, Vice President for Student Success. I've been here for a little over 30 years, and I'm also a University of Melbourne graduate.
Okay. Oh, Sorrel Chesson, I've been here. Oh, you know. In the beginning. That was so long.
Candy Cagle, proud president of the Alum Association for one more month. And the rest of my background really should be on the record, so I think I know both these gentlemen, so welcome and glad to have
Thank
you both here, obviously.
Thank you.
Abner Jean-Pierre, been on the council for 3 years now, also appointed by Governor Patterson. I'm a 1993 graduate of Rockefeller College. I'd like to welcome Michael and Dr. Jones to the first meeting.
Pat Caldwell, also an alum, went to graduate school here a long time ago. I've been on the council just a little longer than you guys. I was actually a Spitzer appointee. I slipped in there in a little. I don't know how long he was governor, but not very long, as we know. I'm really excited that we're going to turn over a new leaf. And really, I think we have a lot of opportunities and committed folks here who want to be more engaged. And I think we can really do something with that. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike Stein. I graduated as an undergraduate here in 1975, went away and got my master's, and actually then came back for my first job here at the university as a residence hall director. Did that for a couple of years, and then left and have done a variety of other things. I currently live in Cooperstown, New York, where I work for the Bassett Hospital in fundraising, and I've been on the council since a little before Pat, but also a Spitzer appointee. And I feel we have tremendous potential and opportunity here to really relook, and we, as we were talking a little bit over lunch, reshape a little bit of what we are, what we have been, what we will be. And I've had the opportunity to speak with both the president and Michael recently in the last couple of months, and I think that we have, that they have a vision for what we can become, and I think it's an exciting time to be involved, so thanks.
I'm Christine Wagner. I'm a professor in the psychology department here. I'm also an alum. I got my bachelor's here. And I am on this council as the vice chair of the University Senate.
Thank you. Dr. Jackson, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Pierre. Yes, I'm Jim Jackson. I spent my 43 years or so in education in the North County School District, and of course, been so successful, of course, in my belief is because of the old Teachers College and the University of Albany. So I owe a great deal of gratitude, and so the my former students as teacher, principal, and supervisor because of the Teachers College and the University of Albany. Presently, I'm a New York State Regent, as well as a member of the Board of Directors of Albany Medical Center, and several other little charities and so forth. And I'm delighted to be a member of the council and to make whatever contribution I can to the advancement of the students, certainly at the University of Albany. My wife and I support, through North Colony, 14 scholarships, three of which go to the University of Albany for students who are very, very strong. Certainly, that's what that's for. The other 10 or so go to students who attend Hudson Valley, and hopefully will beef up their resumes and hope have a chance to come to the University of Albany. Thank you.
Thank you. Rob, Alexandra?
Hi. Good afternoon. Again, I apologize for my tardiness, but I am on my way up. Rob Alexandra. I, too, am alumnus class of 1988. And been involved with the university in the greater Albany area, both when I was just a practicing lawyer and then one of the counsels to Governor Pataki. But, you know, I've always been a loyal to the school and always wanted to figure out ways to make it better while I was within and certainly from afar. And, you know, I've been very blessed to be with a great group of folks there on the council for the past several years trying to move things forward and really looking forward to the you know, the building blocks that have been laid by the others before us and just take it to the next level. So just be glad to be part of the team and look forward to helping in any way I can.
Thank you.
I'm John Morelli from the Office of the General Counsel. I've been here since 1998. I've attended a fair share of council meetings. Regrettably, I'm not an alumnus of this fine institution.
That was in your bio.
Forward to working with you all.
Thank you.
Dean Sanai, I'm the Vice President for University Departments and the Executive Director of University of Albany Foundation, and I'm very fortunate to be working with every single one of you almost every day.
Perfect. And now to break the tie, our student who will present the gavel. And you are.
Gary, I'm Gary Roth. I'm the elected graduate student representative. I'm an alumni in both 2008 and 2011. And 2009. And I'm currently pursuing my doctoral degree at the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering. And on behalf of the council, I'd like to present the gavel to our
council. Thank you.
Then it's now official. Thank you very much. I'll tell you very briefly about myself. 84 and 92 are my degrees, both here from the university. And my relationship has grown, I believe, every year since then in every aspect. But while our name is there and my name has been there, I've certainly been the recipient. I've been the beneficiary. So everything we have done, from you know mentoring kids to hosting classes to some of the more commercial things we've done, it has propelled both myself and my organizations. I truly believe that this university is the heart and soul of this community. I truly believe that. And I just want to help to contribute to build on what you guys have already done. You guys have built this to where we are today. And you know, I am thrilled to be here. I will do my best to, while we are not in the medical profession, I will do my best to do no harm. I am from a chairmanship approach. I have chaired many things. My approach is to be an advocate for the members of whatever I am chairing, to try to get the opinions and thoughts to consensus and to bring that consensus forward. So I am thrilled to be part of this, and I am very thrilled to have Dr. Jones with us here today, to have a sitting and permanent president that will be here much beyond me. He didn't say that, but I'm saying it for him.
34 years is what I'm looking at.
I'm not committing that long. Okay, and I'll turn it over to you. Why don't we call the meeting to order and start on our agenda, and then your president's report will follow. So we are officially called to order, and I will need a motion to review and approve the minutes of the December 7th meeting. So moved by Michael. Is there a second?
Second.
So second by Pat. Is there any discussion on those meeting minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, without exception. And now, our new president, Dr. Jones.
Thanks very much, Michael. It goes without saying I am deeply honored to be here at this first meeting of the council, with Michael and I both kind of starting our tenure as new leaders. And so I'm very, very happy to be here, to have an opportunity to kind of share with you some of the very exciting things that are going on at the university, as well as some of the challenges and issues that we have learned about in our first 86 days, they tell me, that I've been here, but who's counting? It's truly has been an amazing three-month period for me, and as I said, we've learned a lot, and we have a good sense of some challenges, but also have some good sense of some opportunities that really lie before us. And so Michael and I had a meeting probably a month or so ago, shortly after he was named. And I think we had scheduled it for about an hour, and I think we got out of there in about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. There was a lot to talk about because I wanted to get his perspective on some of the challenges that we face as a university, but also get his perspective on his views on how the council needs to work and how do we make sure that we're using your time and your efforts and your talent effectively and efficiently. I am a fundamental believer of, when you're going to have a meeting, then there needs to be a purpose, and it needs to be for some important reason to get work done, and there be important results that flow from that meeting. I don't believe in meetings for a meeting's sake, and certainly know the value of this council and the role that you play in helping me to shape and to guide and to lead this great university. So I look forward to engaging with you as we move ahead. Also, before I get into my report, I would be remiss if we didn't take just a moment to, there's a resolution that was signed, that's going to be signed by me, and there's a memo from the chancellor regarding the leadership that Dan Thompson played in his long tenure as, I guess, vice chair, since that was a long period without having a chair, and somebody will have to tell me what that was all about once. Strike that from the recording.
I'm just joking.
But I think we should take just a moment to read the chancellor's letter, Searle, if you will, so we can enter that into the record, and then I'll continue with my report.
Right. To the University at Albany Council, from Chancellor Nancy L. Zimfer. She writes, I want to take this opportunity to commend Daniel Thompson for his service as council member for the past 16 years. During that time, the university has made significant transformational steps, not only in its research activities, but in academic excellence, student services, facilities design, and of course, leadership. As acting chair and chair of two search committees, Dan has been an integral part of bringing a steady hand to the helm of UAlbany, and more recently, a visionary leader, your new president, Robert Jones, who will move the institution forward to greater success. On a personal note, I appreciate the advice and discussions that Dan and I have had over the past few years, and his ability to carefully evaluate the opportunities for UAlbany to strengthen and grow. Dan is truly a champion for UAlbany and the SUNY system, and I look forward to engaging his support and advocacy on behalf of SUNY in many new capacities in the future. Thank you again, Dan, and congratulations on your years of service. Sincerely, Nancy L. Zimfer, Chancellor.
Thank you very much. So at the appropriate time, I guess we'll be signing the resolution and forwarding it to Dan, but I thought it was important to take a moment out to read so you could hear from the Chancellor. As I said a few months ago, it's been an amazing fast and rapid beginning here over the last 86 days or so. As you know, I arrived here officially, started to work on January 2nd, and immediately began to start the process of listening and learning across this university, both internally and externally. Thanks to the Presidential Transition Advisory Task Force, or team that we pulled together, you know, I've had an opportunity to tour many parts of this university, but it's an ongoing process. It was virtually impossible to take as deep a dive as I wanted to take in terms of learning about all the different parts of our research, our scholarship, our student life, the staff and the staff support work that goes on each and every day at this university that provides the level of excellence that we enjoy at this great university. So I had a chance to meet with faculty, staff, students, alumni, foundation, members of our foundation board, our the university council members. I think I've met almost with each and every one of you one-on-one, if not at other social gatherings. So that's been very, very helpful for me. And we met with elected officials. I think I've met with almost every member of the delegation from this community, and also made a couple of trips to Washington, D.C. to interface with our legislature at the federal level as well. And so all of this was all part of the strategy for me coming in as a new president to gain a deeper understanding and appreciation for the many assets of this university, a better sense of where we are today, and a better understanding of where we need to go in the future in order to advance the University at Albany. And so it's been a very, very enlightening process. We are starting to understand and starting to see some common themes that continue to pop up that cuts across this great university. And hopefully over the next 30 to 60 days or so, we'll be articulating perhaps a more concise vision for where I think the university is going, and presenting that to the faculty and the staff, and hopefully bringing back to this body at some point for your vetting and your questions and answers and your engagement in helping us shape that vision as well. That's critically important to me as we think about what we need to do in the next year or two, and in the next 5 years to advance this great university. One of the things that's been very clear to me as I've been engaged over the last 80 to 90 days or so is that the University at Albany is perhaps one of the best kept secrets, not only in the nation, but in the state and in this region. And so part of what I am very, very clear about is that we have to be much more effective, much more intentional, and strategic about telling the story of this university. I mean, you all know it's excellent. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting around this table taking time out of your schedules to be here. But we have to be a bit more intentional and strategic about making sure others know about what we're good at and the value that we bring to this community in terms of it being an educational institution, a research university that drives innovation and economic development across the state that really improves the quality of life for all New Yorkers. And we have to tell that story, because unless we tell that story, no one is going to tell it for us. The story that will be told for us is every time something negative or bad happens to one of our students. That becomes the compelling message out there, and that's not the message that as president I want out there about the institution that I've been that I have the honor of leading. And so we have to tell the positive stories and the innovative ideas and the good things that come out of here, so then we can more effectively deal with and manage the bad news that's bound to happen. It's a part of life. It's part of being a complex society. And so those things will happen, but we can't let that be the only news that comes out of this great university. We have to intentionally and strategically manage our message. And so you're going to be hearing a lot from me about that in the next several weeks, about how we're going to perhaps start to think differently about how we manage and create a stronger and more compelling message about the value and the assets of the university at LBU. As you know, one of the things that happened as the academic or the calendar year was ending just before the Christmas holidays, the governor approved our NY SUNY 2020 initiative. It's been signed, and the appropriation is still in the budget that was passed by the Senate last night, and hopefully will be passed by the Assembly today. And so the commitment of the resources from the state, the approval to spend the resources that's necessary for us to implement NY SUNY 2020 is still in there. You're just not a done deal until you make it through each incremental step, which is something that was new for me to learn. I was accustomed that once something is appropriated, it's done and the money is there, but not so much here. So I'm learning. I'm learning it. But we're pleased to see that commitment is still there, and we're very, very appreciative for the governor for his support, because I can tell you from my perspective that NY SUNY 2020 funding and initiative will be perhaps one of the biggest investments that's been made in the educational research and engagement mission of this university. What I like about it, and it cuts across all the academic, the schools and colleges of this university, so it's not about putting all the money in the STEM-related or math and science and technology areas. There's an opportunity to engage and to elevate our humanities and other disciplines and provide opportunities to hire 187 new faculty, about 700 or so permanent jobs, to grow our student enrollment by at least 1,350 students. And if I have my way, it'll be significantly more than that, because I think we have the capacity and we will have the brand and the recognition that would allow us to be more strategic about where we grow our enrollment. But the enrollment of this university can, must, and will increase in very strategic ways. And so the NY SUNY 2020 proposal will be the mechanism by which we are able to achieve a lot of this growth. And at the same time, we will construct a state-of-the-art emergency technology and entrepreneurship center, about 250 square feet of space that will facilitate the research, the innovation, the public-private partnership that's necessary to make this work. And I'm really very, very excited about this, and I said this more than once. The notion that this opportunity was, even though the governor had not approved it, the fact that this was on the table was one of the compelling reasons for me to really want to come and lead this institution, because I think this is another opportunity for this university to innovate and to do something that's unique and that will distinguish ourselves among other higher education institutions across the country and across the world. So we're very, very excited about that. We have a working committee in place that we're absolutely committed to two fundamental issues of delivering a capital project. It will be delivered on time and under budget. Not over budget, but on time and under budget if we possibly can, but definitely not over budget, because we don't have the resources to cover those costs. And so we're working through very systematically to make sure that we stay on time over the life of this project, which is, we hope that it will open sometime in the fall of 2017, which is another calibration for me as well. I've got to learn to be patient that it takes 5 years to deliver projects here, but it will give us an opportunity to make sure that we do this right, and that the building and the programming that goes into the building really will allow us to carry out and meet the goals and objectives that were set forth in the plan originally. So we're, as you can tell, we're very excited about this, and you'll be hearing a lot about it. We will be working with our communication staff to make sure that we start a very systematic communication effort in this regard, to keep the faculty, staff, and students updated, and you as council members on what's going on with this very innovative strategic idea. And so just to move on along here, I think you all have heard by now that very shortly after my arrival, I met the Lieutenant Governor, and before you know it, I was asked to co-chair the Capital Region Economic Development Council. I know. See, it's all your fault.
I know.
But anyway, it's an honor and a privilege, and so Michael and I have had a chance to debrief about the ins and outs and the nuances of that responsibility, and so I am deeply humbled to have this opportunity, because it's not about me. This is an opportunity for me, for all of us, to help elevate and again advance the involvement and engagement of the University at Albany in economic development. I'm just a conduit or a vehicle, hopefully, by which that will occur. And we're very excited about this, because I do think it provides an opportunity to raise our visibility, for me to better understand the Capital Region, not only from my role and perspective as a co-chair of that entity with Jim Barber, but also I think it provides an opportunity for me as president of the university to look for strategic opportunities to make sure that we are highly visible and highly engaged with all the partners, critical partners, in the 8, if not 11, county region. I understand that there's some debate about if it's 8 counties or 11, but regardless, we will be reaching out initially, I'm sorry, or 9, I guess is the actual number. But we will be reaching out to each and every one of those counties as we move along. In fact, yesterday we kicked off a nine county tour in Greene County, and I won't go into a lot of detail about that. I think Kathy Herman is going to be providing you a report about that during her presentation. But one of the main objectives there was, for me to understand the assets and opportunities and challenges in the nine county region, and to start a process where I fundamentally want this to be true for the entire state of New York, but thought we start close to home so that people understand that this is their university and that there are strategic opportunities for us to have reciprocal, mutually beneficial partnerships that will lead to a situation where we are able to help these communities and these counties address some of the complex challenges that they're facing, as well as provide very practical experiential learning opportunities for our students, and educational opportunities and research opportunities for our faculty and our staff. And at the same time, a critical part of this for me is an opportunity for, by working more closely with K through 12 districts in these nine counties, that we will elevate the presence and the visibility of the university, so that as kids, young people graduate from those institutions, that the University of Albany will be at the top of their minds in terms of the place that they want as a first choice to attend when they graduate and start higher education. So that's part of our goal as well. So we're not just out on a junket, as my old department head used to say. We're not just trolling around looking at pretty sites. And we're really trying to use this to leverage deep relationships. And the next tour is in Schenectady County. Next week, is it, Kathy, I think it is?
Oh, that's next week.
That's next week. Next week. In fact, last time, unless you're all on a different calendar, I don't know. All right. The state budget, I've already mentioned that, and I know Steve Bettis is going to give you an update on that, so I won't spend any more time talking about the state budget. Just wanted to, FYI, want to inform the council members, in case you have not heard, we have initiated the process of launching the search for the Vice President for Finance and Business. We're still toying with the idea, maybe tweaking that title for that position a bit to more reflect the actual responsibilities. So it either be the Vice President for Finance or Business, or we may call it Finance and Administration or Finance and Operation. Minor detail, we won't spend too much time worrying about that. But this is a critically important position. And Steve Bettis has provided exceptional leadership as the interim vice president for finance and business. So, Steve, thank you very much for your service. And Steve and I joked about this the other day. I want to be very clear. I didn't fire Steve. Steve and I have been talking about this since when?
Shortly after I was named, I think. Even before I started, we were talking. I know, you lazy thing. But anyway, so Steve and I decided that we needed to start a transition to hire a chief financial officer, which is a critical position in these very difficult and still challenging financial times we live in and operate in. So we've started that process, and we've had input from the University Senate. They provided input in terms of providing names for people to serve on the committee. I think we have an outstanding committee that's going to be chaired by Fardeen Sinai and Dean Don Siegel. I almost said David Siegel, and Don Siegel. And so they are the co-chairs, and we look forward to that process moving forward here. I think we have a first meeting next week, if I remember correctly. So anyway, just two more items. You probably have heard in the news that there's a possible collaboration between the university at Albany and the Albany Institute of Art. We are very, very excited about exploring the potential of this collaboration. We think that it will be a win-win situation for the university and for this very fine historic institution that, my understanding, is one of the oldest museums in the country. They have very nice facilities and infrastructure, recently renovated, new additions that have been added. But they're having some difficulty, and we see it as an opportunity for us to create some synergies so that our faculty and staff can have greater benefit and deeper engagement with that institution to enrich our own teaching, education, and research programs through our own museum, as well as mutual benefit from having additional exhibition space and a more visible presence downtown, too. I think that's critically important, and it's something that I've talked about for quite a bit since I've been here. And so we want to emphasize, we're not talking about a takeover, merger, a bailout. This is not bailout. We're not. But we're looking for mutual opportunities to leverage both of these entities so that they will come out of this in ways that will advance all of our programs and our efforts. So we're very optimistic about the potential here. We will go through a very thorough process of analyzing what makes the most sense and how we should go about doing that. And so we'll keep you, and we'll bring that back at the appropriate time as an agenda item to discuss here as well. There is I'm sure you all have also been hearing about in the media about the notion of the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering splitting off from the university. What I can tell you at this juncture is that there is a proposal or an idea, I should say, that's being floated, but there is not a concrete, solid proposal at this juncture that I've had the opportunity to respond to. But the Chancellor and I have been having conversations and playing out different what-if scenarios. And all I would say at this juncture is that from my perspective in the short time that I've been here, it is very clear to me that the current relationship between Nano and the University of Albany needs to be rethought. It's not serving us well, the current relationship. So regardless of whether or not Nano spins out to be a separate college or not, we can't continue down the road that we're going, folks. And I just want to be very, very clear about that. My ultimate goal is always to do what's best for the University at Albany. To what do we do to protect this valuable asset that's been created and developed and nurtured? It has to remain strong regardless of what happens with the Nano College. And I'm very, very clear that the Nano College must and will continue to be a very important, highly effective entity in the state that has demonstrated the ability to drive economic development in very innovative ways. And so you've got to think about how do you create a win-win situation here. And I'm all about win-win. It can't be a somebody wins, somebody loses. That's not appropriate for this situation, particularly in light of all the resources that the University of Albany has put into nurturing that entity and the very impactful work that entity is doing to drive
and put the state of New York on the map, if you will, in the nanotechnology area. So my goal is to work very effectively with the chancellor, and ultimately we'll bring a proposal back here and have a discussion about what makes the most sense for the university. There's a lot else going on, but I feel I've been talking too long. I'm getting tired of hearing my own voice now, so I'm going to stop. But just want to highlight a couple of things that have been going on in the last several months, I'm sure, and you have a copy of it here. This is something that we're extremely proud of. You know, the U.S. World and News, the U.S. News and World Report is one of those entities that people in higher education, you either love it or you hate it. You love it when the news is good, you hate it when the news is bad. And so we're very, very fortunate to have this large number of our programs in the top 100, and actually a significant number of programs in the top 50. This is what we're talking about when we talk about the excellence of this university that we're much too quiet about, that we don't talk enough about, and that we need to celebrate. So just thought we'd share that bit of information with you. And so I'm going to stop there, and I'll let others talk about the other excellence that we've demonstrated in terms of our student athletes over the last several weeks and months. I tell you, I could not be prouder of those young men and women for their talents, their hard work, their commitment that they demonstrated each and every time they took to the basketball court. They demonstrated to me the importance of never giving up, even when it looks bad, even when there's only 3 minutes left in the game and you're down by a couple, 3 points. There's always an opportunity to pull. We had that reversed on us with the women's game. Yeah. We're on the bad end of that this time. But I can tell you, I've never met a more dedicated group of young people who demonstrate their ability not only on the basketball court but also in the classroom. There are some outstanding students on those basketball teams, and I can tell you they brought great visibility. They brought great pride to this university, and we're very, very proud of them. And we will be hosting some big celebration to recognize their contributions sometime in the future. So thank you very much. Any questions, Chair?
I've got a comment, then we'll open it up for questions. But I can say, as a modest supporter of the athletic programs and basketball specifically, to see the president sitting on the sidelines being as physically contorted as he was as those games were happening, it really means a lot. It means a lot to those of us that support the athletics to know that you understand the importance of what that means to the kids, to the university, and to the community. I think that is fantastic. Can we open it up for questions of Dr. Jones at this point?
I'll try to contain myself next season.
No.
Just got about
don't
halfway.
Have me sitting behind you. That's
I got about halfway through, and I said, well, wait a minute. That wasn't very presidential. What's going on there? Clapping and going on. I said, oh, what's going on? Yeah.
Michael, I would comment that, what, 84 days?
84, 86, whatever. I don't know. Vince is the timekeeper. I don't have that.
I think one of the areas that I think the council would very much enjoy, perhaps on our next council meeting, is the community engagement, which you've spearheaded over here in the last, since starting 84 days ago. Mm-hmm. And the number of events, the relationship you've developed with the community. And I think it's you've got a big week coming up next week with the forum on community engagement. Yes. Here on campus, and a number of things are coming, and I'd suggest that we put that on maybe perhaps for the next agendas too.
Yes, there's a lot going on there, and again, I felt I was going on a bit long, so I didn't go into a lot of detail, but we are really started to drive deep partnerships with the mayor. We're working with him on a possible modification of his jobs program that's going to be more connected to a kind of college readiness effort. He's very, very excited about that. We're deeply engaged with Albany Promise. I met with those folks this morning. There are a number of other opportunities that are out there that I think is important for us to have a leadership role in. And to help this university community really understand what does it mean to be an engaged university, what does community engagement means to us, how does it really cut across everything we do, from our teaching, our research, and our service. We've invited one of my good friends and colleagues, Dr. Andy Furco, who was I stole him away from Berkeley about 5 years ago to start the Office for Public Engagement at the University of Minnesota. And so he's coming in next week to have a deep conversation with the university community about public and community engagement. What does it mean to us? How do we incorporate it into the reward system? And how can we really start to talk about it as a core value of this university? And I was talking to Miriam today, and apparently we have three major sessions, and each of those sessions we expect way over 100 people to attend each and every one of them. So this is kind of initiation of our conversation with this community about the values of community engagement, what it means to us, and what it's going to look like in the future for this university.
Any other questions?
I had actually a comment and a question. I'll start with the comment. It occurred to me, I was pretty excited about both of our basketball teams making it into the NCAA, and I'm wondering if there's a way to exploit those poor young people a little bit more, both from a community engagement standpoint and perhaps from a recruiting standpoint. We recently had a couple of direct admit, we call them, receptions in New York for students that, high school students that have been directly admitted, in this case, to the School of Business. But I'm wondering if perhaps there are students out there that we want to have attend, but who are on the fence or haven't made up their minds yet, and is there a way to say, come and meet the basketball team, or bring the basketball team, if there's a cluster of them, say on Long Island or somewhere, to bring the basketball team there, and say, meet the basketball team and kind of lure them into the net to kind of push them over the edge to come here. And I think we can use them also, as I said, for community engagement. I mean, it would be great to go to the local high schools or whatever and play a game or something. I don't know. I don't know if we can do anything like that, but it seems to me, I keep winking at Lee. Like, I feel bad exploiting these kids, but I want to take them on the road a bit.
Our esteemed chair has said many times, I'd like to know what the NCAA ramifications are, if X or Y.
Oh, okay. I forgot about
that. The NCAA will not permit us to take our existing student-athletes into high schools, because that would be an advantage for us. And not say, for example,
of course it is. That's why I want to do it.
Long Island, possibly we say, why are you here and you're violating recruiting rules?
Oh, okay.
But with that said, President Jones is going to have a public engagement with both of our teams, which he's going to announce in the very near future. More importantly, all of our student athletes, not just our men and women's basketball team, are involved in at least two examples of community service.
Okay,
and
good.
We donate over 2,500 hours. They give nothing for it. They get no compensation. There's not any internship involved. They do it to make our community better. So we're doing a lot of that, and as long as we do it with eighth graders or below, we're fine. The NCAA will not allow us to do it. And let me just close with this one quick thing. For the last 4 years, we have done Community Service Day, Commitment to Education, and it's around a women's basketball game. We play it at noon. We invite, and I think Robert, third week you were here, I think if Robert came and observed it and talked to many of the young people, it is one of the neatest things that you'll ever see. These little ones, and we provide clinics, we provide camps, and we provide tutoring for these kids from 8:30 in the morning until 11:30, and then Chartwells provides them with concessions, and it's a great day, and they have a favorable impression of the university. So. Yeah. We're going to do it, but we have to do it within, unfortunately, the confines of the NCAA.
Oh, well.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
But you've touched on something that Lee and others have talked about over the last several days. We do have to think about how do we leverage off of the success of our athletic team for as long as we can to help drive our recruitment process and to help bring greater visibility about this university. Because I can tell you, when we won the America East Championship, it's my understanding that the number of hits on our website went up some 6 to 10-fold in the next 12 to 24 hours. So that means that people were coming there and trying to learn more about these great Danes and about the University of Albany. And when you click on a website, most people kind of troll through and start to get curious about it. I had a great email from the president of the Archibald Bush Foundation, which is not related to George and the rest of the Bushes, but mm-hmm. just one of the co-founders of the 3M Corporation and back in Minnesota. And she was telling me that her 10-year-old son had picked University of Albany to go all the way.
No, that's that Florida school.
And so we got believers out there, folks. And so I'm going to have to send this young man a great sweatshirt, a T-shirt, or something, because he might be here in a few years. So I really got a kick out of that. But we do need to find ways to leverage off of this, you know, because athletic programs get criticized when things don't go right. And so they provide an opportunity for this university to have visibility. As I said in the newspaper, it's priceless. What this opportunity has provided this university in terms of getting our name out there, and so we do need to find ways within the rules and regulation of NCAA to leverage it for as long and as effectively as we can.
I had a question. You referenced a local story, which I guess I'm not local, so I don't see them, maybe others, on the relationship between, or a potential relationship between the university and the institute, the Albany Institute. Are they there in trouble financially? Is that, and they're looking for a partner? Is that it?
They have some financial challenges, yes. Mm-hmm. And
surprising,
but,
an art museum with financial challenges.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, right. But at the same time, you know, this is a valuable opportunity for us because they have rich resources, great infrastructure, amazing collections. And so this potentially could be a win-win situation.
But we no longer have an art history department here, do we? I don't think. Not a major, anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't. My wife was an art history major here, that's how I know.
We do, apparently.
Well, we did.
No, we do have a very rich history department here.
Not art
history. We have a very strong art.
Art, studio art.
But
yes.
I don't know if there's an art history major.
We did.
We have art
don't anymore.
History.
Yeah,
we don't have the.
Yeah, most places. Yeah. A lot of places don't have art history.
No, my wife went to University of Minnesota. They do have.
Yeah, right.
She went there too, but she went from here to Minnesota.
But we have a nice museum just across the way.
No,
it has restricted, limited exhibition space.
No, I think it's a great opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity. Yeah, I just was curious what was there. Okay.
We have been working with them since 1971 in different programs. Actually, we have classes that are held and taught at Albany Institute of History and Arts
every
semester.
Yeah.
And we do have done exhibits every year, and we do a Hudson Mohawk exhibit here with them every year. And we just co-produced a movie with them. It's called The Albany Mummies.
Wow.
So, right.
Go ahead.
Can I ask just one quick question? You talked about building an entrepreneurship center under, I guess, NY20. Well, I guess my quick question on that is, I'm all for an entrepreneurship center, but do we need to actually build a new building? Could we maybe, like, hive off one of those buildings from the Harriman campus? Or I don't know. It seems like I'm wondering where we're going to build another building, I guess, around here. And can we get away without having to actually build a new building?
Well, we can't get away with that. We have to have the building.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of how the funding was aligned.
Oh,
and
and
the kind of infrastructure we need, we don't have a building that we can retrofit to do this.
Oh, okay.
But I think your main point is the notion of, do we have sufficient space on this campus to really expand and to build that kind of facility? And so one of the things that we have been doing that we will at the appropriate time bring back to you, there have been ongoing conversations about the Harriman campus, I guess, for the last 10 years. And so as shortly after I arrived, we started to nudge a bit. And just last week I was down to the OGS office having conversation with the commissioner about this very issue. Because I think it's very clear to me, if we are going to have the space to expand this university in the future, we have to go east. There's no place else for us to go.
And it's conveniently vacant, or a large part of it.
Well, a large part of it is vacant. They are basically starting to kind of rethink and coming up with a different strategy about the use of that entire campus. And they are very interested and understand our needs. They understand our needs. And, you know, I can't make any definite commitments here, but at least they're very open to getting this thing resolved sooner rather than later, because it's been batted back and forth, my understanding, Vince, for almost 10 years or more.
And, at least.
Yeah.
And so there, the commissioner is very excited about the commissioner and the deputy commissioner. Yeah, are very interested in making sure that we have a deep conversation about this and an opportunity for us to be considered for part of that campus for our expansion purposes.
It just seemed like a logical place to me to put an entrepreneurship
yes.
center or a technology park or whatever. You know.
Well, let me just, I won't say
okay,
more at this
point.
Okay,
too obvious.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, there's so many things to talk about and I had to kind of pick
yeah.
and choose. But this is in the kind of the early stage of reinitiating the dialogue with them. But it was a very good meeting. Vince and I went over last week, a week before last, and met with them. And they are very, very excited about this possibility.
Okay.
So the signs are very positive. And my grandmother used to always say, you have to strike when the iron is hot. So
okay.
we will be moving forth as aggressively as possible to get a commitment on that space as quickly as we can.
Good.
So I want to bridge into the next agenda item, but to end this one with a comment. When Dr. Jones and I met, we had talked about the role of the council, and I have talked with many of you individually and a couple of you collectively about the role of the council and where we fit and the need to do a retreat, if you will. And I think what we all agreed is that it has been a crazy 86 days for our new president. And in addition to getting understanding all of the relationships that he's put together, he needs to have a little bit of time to put together his plan for the university and then to extend that to our role in the visioning and the oversight that we have there. So I'm hopeful and I'm glad that the question didn't come up, but I just wanted to close the loop as the chair to say we will be doing that. We're looking at calendars to pick a day that makes sense with some of the other events that Dr. Jones has going on. To try to bring us together and address that very issue. If there is nothing else, I see, Sorrel, that we have the report of the student.
Kevin's not here, so we'll have to pass on the
okay.
Christine.
All right, Christine.
Okay, I can just give a brief update. I can't give a brief update on the faculty as a whole, but I can give you a brief update on faculty governance and the Senate. We are in the throes of electing new senators for next year, and from the schools and colleges, as well as senators at large, as well as the SUNY-wide senators that sit on the SUNY-wide Senate. And we're also starting to form the councils and committees of the Senate, which is a major undertaking. But we put out a call for service and gotten a robust response, which is very encouraging. And so we're hoping to have all of that in place by the penultimate Senate meeting on April 29th.
Is there questions or comments on that report? If not, thank you. Gary.
So I'm going to go through a little report from the graduate student organization. GSO is again fully within its operating budget and compliant with the relevant rules of the university. As you may have known, we've had some previous trouble. finally sorted it all out. We've undertaken a fairly rigorous review of our rules as well, and our constitutional committee, side on the chair of that committee, has recommended numerous changes. These changes include substantial structural reorganization and a change in the name of the organization, and will be voted on concurrently with our spring membership-wide election. We'll also see a new round of officers at that point. Additionally, we're also going to be putting to a vote our student activity fee, which is currently placed at $11 for part-time students and $22 for full-time students. But we don't differentiate in our benefits, and we've discovered that it turns out that part-time students are actually using more than full-time students.
And more dollars.
So we're putting to a vote to raise them both to $22. Don't know how that vote's going to go because we're outnumbered. The full-time students like myself are actually outnumbered by part-time students, roughly 3-1 or so. But we'll see how that goes. Assuming that vote does succeed, it would need to go to SUNY Central, basically, to be approved. I've been asked by members of GSO officers to request that if the university council would support that in a like in any way they can, we would appreciate it. Additionally, there is one incident that does warrant attention. Assuming any of you may read the ASP, you may have heard about it. It was discovered during the winter intersession that some private information, including social security numbers, regarding 62 students was accidentally made available on the GSO website. Despite urgings of the GSO, the UAS maintained that the GSO mandated that the GSO maintain rather than discard this information. They changed the policy since then, since it's now shown that we should not be maintaining social security numbers. But there were relatively few contacts to the page, and the information was not very obvious. Nonetheless, the GSO has offered to pay for identity theft protection for any students who were exposed in this way. That motion was passed, and we have allocated funds to do it. Additionally, we're still heavily involved in student engagement. Through January, we logged over 400 hours of community service, and we're anticipating a lot more. We're actually seeing a lot larger numbers than we have in the past. And we're hoping that this will cause us to break records in terms of fundraising and events such as Relay for Life, as well as participation in other community events. Additionally, while it's not directly something I think that pertains to my update, we were in the past discussing under old business questions relating to mounting student debt levels, and the GSO put together a committee to look into what the graduate students perceive as issues in terms of rising student debt and things that we might be able to recommend to try and resolve this. And I do have a preliminary report summary that I would like to present. So I'd like to motion to add that, to alter the agenda, add that in under old business, if that's possible.
Well, I think that we have that on a subsequent, don't we have that topic on a subsequent meeting agenda?
Yeah, coming up at the next meeting, because we're required by law to post the agenda items a week in advance legally. So while a discussion can go on with regard to any item, the addition of an agenda item, here I may need to bow to also to John Riley, who's nodding his head in the affirmative. So while a discussion could go on, I believe the addition of an item to an existing agenda can't be done at the meeting. But I will say that that item is an agenda item for the May meeting, when full reports, including from the Director of Financial Aid, on what the debt of our current students are, and so on, will be detailed. There's no reason why comments can't be offered at this point.
Could you provide all of us with that report? Is it an actual physical report or a narrative report?
I was going to read just a short summary of the findings, but if you prefer,
I think we should hold that till that point. But I think it would inform all of us if you wouldn't mind providing us with the report, the full report. That way, when we have the full discussion, it sounds like that's something of interest to everyone here at the table. And I think, you know, as you were part of, we had that discussion over lunch, that it is a situation that is unsustainable. And I think it's excellent that you guys took the initiative to move it. And I think we want to give it the airtime that it deserves, as opposed to just a soundbite.
All right, absolutely. So in that case, would it be preferable for us to basically assemble the full contents of the report into a single document and forward that on to
Steve, correct, or Sorrell, or Steve?
Sure, and then I can send it out, and then it can come up again, if you'd like, at the next meeting, if that's acceptable.
Circulate
it
with the materials right, for the next meeting.
Right, with the material for the next meeting.
Yes, okay, very well.
Okay, good. Any questions? If not, we'll move to Kay, an alumna.
Michael?
Uh-oh.
Lucky I didn't bring the base to wash your feet today. This is my third service, and as I was leaving, the acolyte thought I was going to another service, so he packed it in with my things, and I said, no washing of feet. As president of the Alum Association, it is my honor and privilege to present to you a little token of our high esteem. Set of our cufflinks.
Oh, thank you very much. And I am a big cufflink wearer, so thank you. Thank you very much.
I know. Please, Sarah Billow, I've always observed that you wear cufflinks.
But you don't have any purple cufflinks.
I do actually have purple cufflinks, but thank you.
While he's looking at those, I just want to say that we certainly do treasure
Steele is an alum. And as a matter of fact, at the fall demonstration, that was back in 2010, we awarded the very prestigious Distinguished Alumni Award to Michael. I had to do this, Michael. There were a few comments that I just want to... The citation began with, "What gives Michael Costanos his edge? he still feels like the new kid on the block. He tries each day, he starts each day with fresh eyes, helping him identify new opportunities and areas needing improvement. It's an approach that has paid off for him in all concern." But here's the one that I truly love the most. It comes from Bob Blackman, chairman of the board of Gilbert's Club. He said, "Michael has one direction only, forward. And one approach only, fully committed." And that truly says it all about Michael.
Thank you very much.
We surely do love you.
Thank you.
Okay, on to the business. I will stay with my sticking point, as I always promise. Well, as you know, at the very heart of what we do in the alumni is to connect our alums to the university and then to each other. And so as examples of that, I'm going to pass out so you can see what we're doing going forward. A list of some of the events, but if I could just step back a moment, I want to tell you a bit about our big Purple Ground Ferocious Feast. It was our 16th annual, and as always, it was a sellout. And we just want to thank Dr. McElroy and his staff and Kathy for promoting it and so on. It was a marvelous success, and I know our friend here was there, and we should certainly try to make sure you come in the future. We had our board meeting, and we had on February 2nd. Our next one is coming up April 20th. But we had a very grateful celebration and rejoicing as we welcomed our newest board member, fully fledged voting member, our 19th president, Robert Jones. I forgot, by the way, Dr. Jones, to give you your commitment list. You're responsible for 3 out of the 23 committees. Just kidding. Okay. I was asked that by the governor. But I might add that we were so thrilled to have him with us and received a great report from him. And as I've told him many times, I shamelessly say that his appointment to be our president was a divine inspired appointment because of who he is. So we're delighted to have you as a member of our board. And just in conclusion, this is my last meeting. The next meeting will be Tim Murphy. He'll be with you for 2 years. Wonderful, wonderful person. You'll enjoy him a great deal. This clock has certainly ticked faster than I thought it ever would, but I just want to take this opportunity to express to all of you how much it meant to attend here. It's been the highlight, frankly, of my presidency, and you've been extraordinary in showering me with support and encouragement, so I thank you all very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
I would hope this would not be your last meeting. I would hope that you would join us at our next meeting for an appropriate resolutions and best wishes.
Thank you.
Do
a handoff.
Because you've done an excellent job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorrel, our research report?
Looks like that's going to have to hold till the next meeting.
What happens when you meet on Thursday, huh?
All right, then we will trip in then to our new business change to the code of conduct, and I believe we have a motion.
You actually have a new policy in your packet that's called the Good Samaritan 911 policy that we're proposing to add to the alcohol policy section of the student code of conduct. And the purpose of this policy is really to encourage students to report a medical emergency and not be worried about repercussions of the campus conduct system when things get really bad. Because sometimes they worry, if I call 911, I might get in trouble for alcohol or I might get in trouble for drugs. So the purpose of this is to really encourage the students to call, to put emphasis on saving a life, to put emphasis on good bystander behavior, as opposed to on any kind of repercussion they might face as a result. Basically, we put this into effect this past year as a pilot project, and we used it 6 times during the fall semester, and we used it 3 more times during the spring semester. And we do think that it is an effective policy and it's a good way to move forward. We still have the prerogative, of course, in cases of alcohol and drug incidents to involve the mom and dad if the student is under 21, and we do that. We also can, you know, enforce them taking an alcohol prevention course that's part of our counseling center prevention activities. And so there's ways to still address the behavior without sanctioning the student.
So can I just stop you?
Sure.
And this is just a matter of form for my purposes. If we could get a motion to put it on the table, and then we can do a full discussion of it. So is there a motion to approve this?
Council motion and council second, just to bring it up.
Anyone?
Second.
Okay, so now it's on the table, and then we can have a full and open discussion. Go ahead.
So pretty much, I mean, you've got the policy in front of you. It's simply a paragraph long. There's additional FAQs that are a part of this that students can look at as part of our web, but it's just this paragraph that we're proposing to add to the student code of conduct.
Discussion? Questions?
Eric? I have a question. While apparently it's come up apparently 9 times in the pilot in total, were there any occasions where any grumbling was noted? Were the students who were involved in the use of this policy subjected to having their parents notified, or these other things that can occur? And if so, was there grumbling about it? Because while I think that this policy is definitely a step in the right direction, we were much more concerned with medical emergencies than we are with a disciplinary action. If a student still feels they could get in a great deal of trouble over it, there may still be reluctance.
Mm-hmm. That is true. One of the things that we have found in this day and age with students that's very different from the past is that students have a lot of contact with their families all the time. Students are in contact with their parents, you know, either by texting or by phone calls a lot. And parents can be very beneficial in helping us address these issues with students. Now, we also have a policy that spans this policy that if for some reason a student feels that it's going to be very detrimental to them if we contact their mom and dad, maybe the relationship is not what it should be, or there's going to be repercussions that is going to be too harmful for the student, then we do not contact the parents.
So the student is always afforded the opportunity to respond to this possibility before it's enacted?
They do.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
I have a general point, but is it the appropriate time to do it
now?
Yeah, in general?
Mike asked me to do this.
Student conduct. The policy has to be, what is the time? When I first joined the council, we had a committee for the code of conduct, and we met prior to resolution or the renewal of the code of conduct. Does this have a term, the whole general student code of conduct? And I thought there was a 5-year.
I think
not that I know.
It previously had been set up a 5-year term, but I think there was a recognition that circumstances were developing that required on an as needed basis that provisions. Now, I don't know whether, as a matter of practice, the entire code is anticipated or scheduled to be reviewed on a 5-year increment.
Because that's one of the charges that the council has, and you know, in reviewing and approving, and if there is a timetable to do that, and we were approaching that, perhaps that's an area that the council would become a little bit more involved in, either with a small committee or task force that we used to do.
Yeah,
5 years is coming through.
What we used to do, Pierre, was we only did the updates once a year, and that was because the actual code of conduct was done in a written format.
Correct.
That we published and gave out to each individual student. And we decided that once it was no longer going to be published that way, but it would be published on the web, that instead of trying to cram everything into one meeting and talk about all the changes, that we would do them as they came up. Now, to your point, though, right now we are undergoing a full review of the code of conduct. Because over time, you know, things get into the code and there's a lot of legalese. There's a lot of language in there that we believe is not really conducive to a good restorative process with our students. And so we're reviewing the code in its entirety now, and we're going to be bringing that entire code revision to the council. And it's, I think this might be a time to discuss how we best want to do that. It takes a long time to
but,
do
but
this.
But along with what Pierre is saying, wouldn't that be a situation where it would be, something to you, Mike, of course, but you know, instead of having all of us be handed that piece of paper, I mean, it's obviously not a small document. Should there be one or two people appointed first, as Pierre was pointing, when you stepped out, Pierre reminded everybody that years ago, and that's true, that there was a special committee that reviewed the code of conduct and then reported to the board and said, okay, this is what we think, and subject to anybody's thoughts, this is what our thoughts are, right, Pierre?
Correct.
So why wouldn't, given the...
Right, it's going to be an enormous task.
Right.
And it's going to be a task that we will, you know, go through this process ourselves. We will run it through council's office to make sure that we're on board with John Riley and his office.
Then
we'll bring it to whatever group, you know, might best be suited to do this.
And what's your time frame for that?
We're hoping to complete it this summer. So we would like to, you know, enact it for the fall.
But I mean, I think, personally, I think that there should be a mark to show change version that everybody would get a chance to review and then not start from scratch. And as Pierre mentioned, I think it's a good idea that, you know, subject to you, you know, you would decide a couple of people to look at it first and then.
Especially
you know,
maybe people that come late to the meeting.
Well, exactly.
I got stuck behind a trooper. I had to go 55
for a while.
All in favor.
As a lawyer, Rob should review that document and give us some thoughts on that. It's about 325 pages.
And no lawyers.
Lawyers read fast, don't they?
But we,
that's why I asked for the mark to show change.
We can probably put it on tape. You can listen to it in the car.
But again, I think that's a great suggestion, and without exception, that's what we'll do is to appoint a couple people as a subcommittee, giving enough time for that committee to do their work and for the full board to be able to review the committee's work. So as soon as you can, as soon as it's feasible for you to get that to this group, it would be helpful.
Fine.
Is there anything else on this question? On this,
Kristen, how far along are you in that process?
We're probably about halfway through from our internal group. So we still have to go to John Riley and go over all of the changes with him. So that's why I'm hoping that this summer a smaller group can look at a total review.
A 300 pages is going to be a tough one to get a student to voluntarily
digest.
It's
probably more like 25.
All right, so that's awesome. So in that case, it's not quite as daunting, but I was going to say it might be worthwhile to consider either the graduate student representative or the undergraduate or the student member, putting one of them on the committee, because that they're the ones who are most likely to be able to read such a document and best interpret whether or not, as a student, it's readily comprehensible and understandable intuitively.
Okay. Is there anything else on this question? If not, we have a motion and a second on the table. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? I'd say none. It was carried unanimously. Thank you. Pierre, I think you're up.
No, I think that's...
that's gone. I didn't get the revised agenda, but then Lee.
Member Clancy. Yes.
Thank you very much. It's Clancy filling in for Pierre.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Thank you. As Dr. Jones had mentioned earlier in your packet, there's
Thank
a resolution
you.
Honoring Dan Thompson. I'd like to offer it up on behalf of the entire council for all his hard work and dedication that he put towards this university.
Hear, hear.
Yes.
Second.
Second, third,
is there any discussion other than applause on this motion?
Well, just the only thing I would say is that we had talked a little bit informally over lunch about the possibility of incorporating that recognition with some event at some point in the future where we could honor Dan, thank him in person rather than just send him. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a nice gesture, but it's a piece of paper at the end of the day. I mean, it would be nice to shake his hand, look him in the eye, and thank him. So I would move. I don't. It's not a motion, but just a comment.
It's a
that we're trying to do
the
that.
Sense of the board, and we can work with this group to see if we can come up with something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I would also observe that a number. There are 20, and I'll get to that in the ACT reports. There are 29 state-operated campuses, which the ACT membership is outside the community colleges, is the state-operated there are 261 college council members, and over 100 have either expired or are vacant. And we, as an association, thank those council members that serve an expired term, because without those, we would not have quorums. And here's an individual that served not only in an expired term, but went way beyond everything that was asked of him to do that. So I want to just second, and my hat's off to Dan for his dedication and the work that he put into this.
I was just echoing, Danny and I were friends prior to us joining on the board here together. I worked for his father in the governor's office, and he didn't even go to SUNY. He was a Cornell guy, and we would always rip him whenever we could.
Part of Cornell.
But if we could get our own alums to actually love and support this university as much as someone who was not part of the university, at least in the beginning, going to school, then we would have no problems going forward. So I echo everyone's thoughts, both spoken and thought, that we'll miss him, but you know, we'll keep moving forward based upon you know, the hard work of the folks behind us.
And I think the chancellor wrote a very nice letter.
Yeah, I heard you.
Okay,
yeah.
Good, great.
I heard everything.
That was very, very good.
See, nothing more. Can we carry that unanimously?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, right. Yes. Here. Thank you, Lee. Now you're up.
Okay. Just this is a rather brief intro to athletics based on the NCAA recertification process. Pierre was kind enough to serve on the NCAA as a member of our NCAA steering committee, which was chaired by Sue Phillips. And the essence of it is an accreditation to determine that our athletic program is in concert with the rest of the campus. And basically what we want to do is give you a quick overview of what we're doing and then entertain any questions that you may have. And as a governing body of the institution, with all the things that go on in college athletics, the governing body needs to be aware of where we're doing and where we're headed. So that's the purpose for this, and I promise you it'll be very brief. The mission statement, everybody in college athletics has this. This talks a little bit about what we're trying to do and why we're doing it. Most people don't read this unless we either get in trouble, as the president said, or parents are not happy. So the mission statement's pretty generic. The value statements are things that pretty much guide what we do every day. President Jones mentioned that both in Philadelphia and in Delaware, we met several of the parents, and they were kind enough to share with us what their kids are getting out of university beyond athletics. Right. And they talked about being able to get jobs and to get a fine education and make a contribution to society. So those are the kind of values that guide us. You've been talking a lot about our basketball program, and it is tremendous, but we've won 63 conference titles in the past 10 years. And how we divide that up in management and provide oversight is with a group of team leaders that make sure that our coaches and our student athletes have the opportunity to be successful, and so you just saw that structurally there. Our management team, a group of people that people think, and Michael Castellano and I have talked about this a lot, that you just roll the ball out and open the doors and people show up. That's not quite how it's done. People have to be taken care of in the sports medicine area, communications area, compliance area, academic area, student success, as we talked about, and that is also structurally outlined there. We want to make sure that our athletes have a total experience. And as President Jones said, public engagement and service is a part of that. And as I indicated, probably we our teams donate over 2,500 hours annually to various entities in the capital region. And we're very proud of that. We will continue to do that. Student success has Relay for Life, which is raising money for cancer. And our kids raise over $3,000 for that. So, again, as part of our overall annual plan and where we're going, we do want to win. That's important. That's one of the reasons the president got so happy when we beat Stony Brook to go to the championship. He was very excited about that. We want to promote first-class events. That's important because we want people to return and continue to support our athletes and the university. Again, part of that action plan is making sure on a day-to-day basis that we're in compliance with all NCAA rules. I mentioned Pat had some great ideas, but if we did it, we'd be on probation. So we don't want to do that. But we can get to it in other ways. And so these are just activities that are listed there that we practice 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and 99.9% of them are good things and positive things in terms of what go on. And certainly we wanted to share those things with you. As we move forward, this thing doesn't move fast enough.
I thought it was moving too fast.
Well, when you live it every day, maybe it is.
You could send this to us if anyone wanted to see it, right?
Well, oh, absolutely. Yeah, no. But again, for the record, we wanted to make certain that has been aware of where we are, where we're going, and what we're doing. And our business is drastically changing every day. There's no Big East. Now there's a new Big East, and now there's an America 12. And so a lot of that has to do with commercialization and whether or not our student athletes are true students and whether or not they're professional. So that was quick. But before we entertain any questions, I want to give you some other takeaways about what has occurred. I mentioned the 63 championships and what they mean and where we've gone in the 27th. NCAA appearances over the past 10 years. Our grade point average for our women is 3.2. Our overall grade point average for our entire athletic program with 19 sports and 500 athletes, 2.9. And I will tell you right now, of the 126 teams that were in the NCAA Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament, there are not very many that have that kind of academic performance. When you look at our staff size, and I know that President Jones and Steve and I have talked about this a lot. We've had a lot of success, but we do it with only 35 full-time people. If you go up to Buffalo, they have 80. If you go to Stony Brook, they have 75. And even Bloomington, who does not have a football program, has 50. So we're having a lot of success with fewer resources. And then before I entertain any questions or thoughts, March 10th, the President and several of us went to Vermont. And we won the America East title, and it was on ESPN, a national telecast. 93 million people are subscribers to ESPN. On the 23rd, the 22nd, we played Duke, CBS. There were 9 million viewers there at noon that time. And then on Sunday, the 24th, we won ESPN2 again with our women playing North Carolina. Again, 93 potential viewers watching that, 93 million. So a real advertisement of our university, not just our athletic program, for a two-week period that Kathy is the expert here. I don't know if we have enough money. I don't know that President Jones has enough money to buy a commercial to talk about not just the success of the athletic program, but the academics and the service and the character and what the institution stands for. That's really what athletics is all about. And one quick anecdote, we were, Saturday morning, we were getting ready to go to the game, and Luke Devlin's parents, one of our three Australian kids, were standing in the lobby, and so President Jones went over and said, "I want to shake your hand. You are a megastar. You made the New York Times this morning." And they kind of looked at him and said, "What are you talking about? What are you reading here?" And when they were chatting and so forth. But the beauty of that is that we have three Australians, all who have earned a GPA of 3.3 or higher. Two are academic honor students who are just wonderful kids. And their parents, and Rowley's parents were here, and Devlin's parents were here. They have no idea why there are 22,000 people on noon yelling and screaming on national television, but they were having a good time. So really a unique experience and a very special experience. And I could go on about our women. I want to have gender equality here. We have one young lady, Julie Foster, who is the leading rebounder in the history of our program and also the second leading point scorer during her career. She was a non-scholarship player. Julie is a presidential scholar in the School of Business, Michael. And I think John Lovato was saying maybe one of the brightest students that he's ever taught in his 40 years of teaching here. So that gives you sort of a sense of the students, of our achievement, and where we're going and what we're doing. And lastly, before I entertain any thoughts, comments, or questions, we don't count in our business very much, but this is just something for you to know. When those championships were won, where they were won and what they mean to the university. And we plan to win more. And since Robert has been here in January, we've won four championships. Two in men's women's basketball and two in many women's indoor track. So things are going well. And I will stop there.
Questions and comments?
Good question, and maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention, but I know during like football season, they allow the school, each school, at least when I watch football games on TV, to do, I don't know if it's a 30-second clip
a 30-second
on the school.
Spot, yes.
Do we have a clip on us that we could use for, that we could have, I don't know if we could have used it during the NCAA?
Well, as Robert learned, as we were running in and out of locker room,
I
press
conferences. How that works exactly. But.
At ESPN and CBS, fortunately, unfortunately, control every aspect of a production. And you can have it in the can, so to speak, but if they have a commercial that runs over, or if they need to tag another commercial, sometimes it doesn't get in. But Kathy's group has prepared several.
Yeah, we did run a commercial during the on CBS for the men's tournament. We had an opportunity to run one commercial. We had a discounted price, ran in the New York metropolitan area, and we just got the results back, and we reached 96,000 viewers. Mm-hmm. And then we also advertised in the Delaware market. That was ESPN2. There was, unfortunately, it would have run in this market as well, but they dropped the commercial in this market, so we only ran in the Delaware market, which is still wonderful. We haven't gotten that stat yet back from them.
That was another question.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. First, I have to personally apologize for not being in as many games as I would like to be, because I really like college athletics, but I don't live right here. But I just wanted to say a comment as someone who graduated from this university at a time when athletics perhaps, and school spirit, I would say, Chris, was probably not at its height in the 70s. Even for the people I graduated with, I mean, I can tell you that the internet was buzzing back and forth with people, because, you know, it really does resonate with people. And obviously, there are people who are very big sports fans who were here who never went to a game when they were at Albany. It may be hard for you to realize that, but this was a very different university in the 70s. It was a Division III program, fairly low profile in most sports, with the exception of basketball, which was always because of Doc Sowers, was pretty high profile. But I just think it does an incredible amount for the Alumni Association.
Absolutely.
But I think the important thing is that we're doing it the right way. And I know you've commented on this before, Lee, and I think that's the message, because just winning is not enough.
Right.
Because, you know, in all fairness, the NCAA is highly tainted, and in some cases for good reason. But the fact that we're doing it and we're doing it the right way is really the message I think we need to get out to our alumni group from all those years, because I think it really will resonate. And I think that's how we make this maximally impactful for they'll support our alumni engagement, they'll support our fundraising, they'll support everything, is by not just by winning, but by showing that we're winning and doing it the right way.
Well, President Jones, when he has his celebration of champions for both these wonderful teams and wonderful coaches and wonderful people, you will see that. Mm-hmm. But another young man, Jacob Yachty, who is a graduate student, is getting an MBA, has already been hired by J.P. Morgan. And he told me about his interview process and what it was like. And Michael, you can appreciate this, Ben, and the business side and the financial side. He said it was much harder than any practice or any workout that he ever went through, because it was most of the day. And he prevailed. And one of the reasons he thought that he prevailed was because he was a student athlete and also a good winner. He won the CEFQ Top Scholar Award for the American East Basketball Championship. So thank you, Michael, and CEFQ.
Abner?
Well, Lee, congratulations to you and your staff. And there was a story in the paper about the lack of students at these games in the study that President Jones and you are going to conduct. I mean, is there any thought being given to also extend that to alumni? Because I know a lot of alumni here. They've never been to campus to see any games.
You know, that's an interesting point, Pierre. We're doing right now, and President Jones will get the work on this, I think, in late June. The America East hired a research company to conduct a marketing study of why, and this is a nationwide problem. This isn't a UALB problem. Duke student attendance down. North Carolina student attendance is down. University of Kansas student attendance is down. One of the things I've learned, one of the takeaways from the research, one, students don't communicate in the same manner that we communicated when we were in college. The first way that they communicate is through texting. The second way that they communicate is through Twitter and Facebook. So we've got to look at the tools in terms of how we engage them and how we invite them. The fourth way that they communicate is face-to-face contact. That's the least amount of the four main forms of communication. So are we communicating properly? We don't know. So this is a national phenomenon. It's much better. I mean, if you look at the YouTube of our president when we scored the last second against Stony Brook, he's jumping higher than Mike Black. And so the students are rushing the court, and President Jones is saying, come on, you know, and this is on YouTube. We have it in our files in the office. So it's a national problem. It is being addressed. One of the things that's going to help us is that our athletes are true students, and they're engaged with the rest of the campus. Luke Devlin lives with three non-athletes. Most of our athletes are in suites together. Luke went to Coach Brown and said, here's a gentleman from Connecticut, and Chris, you probably know this story, a gentleman from New Jersey, and I think one from Long Island, and two of them are student leaders, and they are having the best time of his life. Because he said, I'm around my teammates all the time, at games, on the road. I don't want to be around the whole time. And they're having, and this is a young man that's come 24 hours, we said, the flight to
28.
Us. 28 hours. And knew nothing about UAlbany until he stepped off the plane. Now, think about that. Think about that. The second thing is, I have a 6'9" women's basketball player from New Zealand.
Right.
Never set foot on this campus until she came to be recruited. Who fell in love with the coach, fell in love with the player, and now is a darling of this university in women's college basketball. So there's a lot of good things happening. We've got to harness them. We've got to put them in some kind of framework where we can be consistent with it, and I think that would be the least of our problems.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity to get the alumni really excited about it, because a lot of them live in this area, they're not involved.
Well, I can say that, just following up on that, Lee Cervello and his five staff were on the phone constantly the day after the Vermont, and with, again, tweets and so forth, how can I get tickets, how can I get tickets, how can I get on the bus, and so on.
Last thing, and I don't want to take up any more of your time, you've been so gracious with your comments and your questions. There were eight teams in that region. One was for the Gulf Coast. Whole other issue going on right now about that comment. I'm not going to comment on that. It's a wonderful story, and I'll leave it at that. But as we're sitting around that room with Duke and Florida Gulf Coast, Georgetown, so forth and so on, each of us, and that's one thing I will say that's fair about this process, each institution gets a certain allotment of tickets. We got 300, and you could get as many as 250 on consignment. And many of you around the room were involved in that and knew how difficult that was. We were the only team that didn't hand back tickets.
Okay.
Even Duke handed back 50 tickets that they didn't sell. So we're talking about our alumni not being engaged, and now part of that was locale. I understand that we were in Philly, we were in the Northeast footprint, but we could have given out another 500 to 800 tickets to alumni and students. We had a student bus there. Most universities don't provide that, and we filled it up in less than 3 hours. So as we're talking about this issue, there are a lot of moving parts to it, and there's some good pieces too. We just have to harness those, which we will.
Robert?
Thanks. Lee, congratulations again for the total, not just the boys, men's and women's basketball, but just all the sports programs. I mean, you've been it's been great having you ever since you just got on board, and you know, just like everything, it's just moving forward. I was in the city that day. I couldn't make it to the game, but I was helping through Fardeen and the Alumni Association at a bar my buddy owns in Midtown. And we spoke initially. They figured, maybe 50 people. It's like 200 people showed up on a Friday afternoon. So it's there. And if you get the product out there like we have, they will come. So it's a small indication of things there. I just wanted to just get back to something. We had a discussion before just about some of the metrics that we use, and you mentioned the grade point averages. And I think, I remember last time we spoke, you said that, benchmarking against our peer groups, we were up there. Can you share a little bit about what the support is that we provide for the student athletes? And I was one, and it was difficult. And I can also echo your student that was at JP and the difficulty when I was a MD at Bear and at JP. They always traditionally want to pull from the Ivy League schools, and it's just kind of blinders. So, you know, if you get the guys that are out there and they can put their arms down to invite the kids in from the they call, I hate it, they call it the non-traditional schools, but that's how they do things.
Yeah.
It's a surprise that they're like, not to us, because we know, but to many of them, at the caliber of students that we have. And a lot of times, it is the athletes that are able to connect, and then once they see the GPA and stuff, that they're brought in over the boat. Talk about just what you guys do, just collectively.
That's an excellent question. And we have a program that we call the Breakfast of Champions, and we've had 130, and you can appreciate this as a faculty member. Faculty members attend that, and basically we invite, each of our athletes invites one professor to come at an 8 o'clock breakfast to talk about the life of a student athlete, the life in the day of a student athlete. And they talk about getting up in the morning and going to lift, going to class, going to practice, going to study hall. We've got two graduate assistants and two full-time people in our academic support unit. And one of the reasons that we have such good students is there's not a lot of time for nonsense, because between class and film and weight training and study hall, there's just not a lot of time. One of the great things that we have is if you are below a 2.6 grade point average, you've got to double your study all the time. So that means students that are not technically at risk, but we're concerned that they're not achieving at a certain level academically, we give them extra support. We also utilize our best student leaders as tutors. So we have one young lady who is in the lab, in RNA lab. Robert, we were talking about it the other day, who's a track student athlete. And the gentleman, Dr. Edges, who runs the lab, said she's the best student researcher that he's had in over 30 years. He spent 25 years at North Carolina State. So she's a tutor in our program. So we've got great students who are helping students who are not achieving as high, in addition to the support that we have on staff. So we sort of built a culture of recognition that you've got to do well in the classroom, in the field of competition, and in the community in order to be successful once you leave here. And it's working. I mean, Robert was, he's just not saying what he thought. He was in the locker room with our men after the Duke game. And he spoke to them and he talked to them. He was in the press conference with our young women who were emotionally just torn apart after losing to North Carolina on national television, a game that we controlled for 37 minutes,
right,
that we should have won. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But it's a great question that you pose, but this is a cultural thing that's happening in our program that our students have bought into, that our coaches have bought into, that our professors are buying into, and hopefully our council it has bought into, and it just continues to repeat itself. And I will close with this. UConn cannot go. They didn't go this year, they're men, because of academic improprieties. They can't go next year to the tournament because of academic improprieties. And we have a benchmark that we call academic progress rate that is a measure of how you do with retention, a measure with how you do with eligibility. And ours is 980. And if any of you have heard Andre Duncan, Secretary of Education, talk about it, he says if you're not graduating at least 50% of your athletes, you shouldn't be allowed to participate in championships. That's a 930. So we're almost at the top. We're in the top 10% of all Division I programs in terms of academic achievement and performance. So along with the success that we're having here, we're also having it in the classroom.
Great job.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's great.
Great.
Any other questions for Lee? Excellent job, Lee.
And this is really what Rob is talking about. The guy that's really responsible for all of this over the last number of years that he's been here is sitting here. And he's the one that hires the coaches, with all due respect. You know, I mean, you're involved. Everybody else is involved to a certain extent.
No, I wasn't involved.
But frankly,
not yet.
Well, you will. This is the guy that's hiring the people. He's the one that's hiring the staff. He's the one that runs the show, the program. I've worked with him for years. I view him as a great friend. My family views him as a great friend. I think all of us here have such huge admiration. I've been on two presidential search committees with him. The real accolade here should go to him as well, to Lee, who is the person behind all this. And if we didn't have Lee, I don't think we'd be where we are today.
No doubt.
And I know everybody knows I'm kind of biased towards certain teams here.
Really? That's okay. I make up the other bias.
But, you know, I'm just saying that, Lee's done a hell of a job. And I would like to put on the record, though, that we did beat Syracuse.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. And, I got a lot of calls on that one.
That was like semi-national TV. Right?
Yes, it was.
Well, if you're talking about TV, we are playing Hopkins on national TV.
Yes.
It's coming up very soon on ESPN. And you know, but that's the real point of my comments isn't that. It's really that I think all of us owe a big round of applause to the man who's responsible for all this.
Coaches that I didn't hire were Vivez and Bob Ford. And Bob Ford is almost as I'm old. So.
I don't think anybody remembers.
Not 1844.
Who's ever going to remember who hired me? I was 18 years old when I met
him. I ran under Vivez.
The
first year.
Contagious in that building.
How are you going to follow that, Steve? With the budget?
No, we're going to talk about the budget.
From athletics to the budget.
The man responsible for the budget.
As the president mentioned, both houses have been burned in the midnight oil over the last 2 days, signing budget bills. And part of this PowerPoint presentation was based on the executive budget. There were changes at the end. It's a mixed message. There's some good news and some bad news and a potential threat at the end. Which is better than we've presented some years where it's been all bad news. So the good news is that we've got flat year-to-year state support, so our state support remains consistent with the maintenance of effort provision that was included in the New York City 2020 Challenge Grant. Every year that we see that happen, we breathe a sigh of relief. We're glad our NASA until we actually see it. Citywide, $106 million increase in tuition approval. That would reflect the income that we're going to see from the $300 increase in resident undergraduate tuition for the third year of the five-year national tuition plan. So they let us do that. We talked about it, I think, in a prior meeting. SUNY was looking at a new resource allocation model. All state tuition receipts get funneled through SUNY, broken back out, in state support, I should say, not tuition receipts. And they're looking at a resource allocation model that would replace the role BAP, which has been defunct now for 4 or 5 years since before the cuts started 5 years ago. The new model was launched, was proposed to be used this fall, and met with some resistance. There were many more loser campuses than there were winner campuses. A lot of consternation heard from the presidents, including presidents at this campus. We stood to lose some $1.8 million in funding, and they put it on hold. So we're not gonna see that. So they're gonna pass through state support that we had last year. So state support $61 million, as you see. Our early estimates of what we'll see in new tuition, plus up of $8 million, will be about 112 now, and our academic excellence fee will generate about $1 million. Most of that money is being allocated back out in support of SUNY 2020. We're already kind of starting down that path. So Sue Phillips has many, many faculty hires underway. The other divisions are also busy staffing up to a limited degree in anticipation of the new student and faculty teaching staff that we'll see over the course of the 2020 wrap up. So that's the good news part. Limited good news. These are all the construction that you're seeing on campus and the stuff that's getting in the way. There was a reappro, and the funding for those projects, School of Business, Campus Center Extension, the things that were, as I said, were underway, has not been interrupted. There were two their word and gave us an $88 million appro for the Walmy 2020 building, wherever that is and however we build it. It will be our budget and on time. But we've got the $88 million appropriated for it. The bad news is, and this is a big bad news, our capital plan expired this year in a couple of days. No new capital funding in the entire state budget for any SUNY campus. And it's we were used to, for the past 10 years, seeing at least $33 million a year in critical maintenance funding and then various strategic initiatives approved. So that's a concern for us. Out-year plans, as you can see on the next line, at least as the governor's proposed it, doesn't call for any new capital until 17-18. I don't think that's sustainable. I don't know how we can maintain this campus without any critical maintenance. And somewhere on the next slide, I guess you'll see that we reckon that our deferred maintenance right now is over $1 billion. and growth needs. And so how we can manage to do this without any critical maintenance over the next few years is beyond me. So we think that slowly but surely pressure will build. This is just the budget. Both houses will be in town for two or three more months. And as I told concern in a union meeting yesterday, was a concern. As far as I can see, about 100% of our lobbying effort this year has been spent in trying to get capital reinstalled in this budget. We need it. We've got a lot of great plans. We just finished. And I remember John Giarrusso was in here late last year, giving you an update on the facilities master plan. A huge effort that basically brought right up to speed and current the forecast of our need for critical maintenance and new construction. And again, that comes in at about $1 billion plus. So we're going to have to wait and see. The lobbying will continue. I know the presidents are concerned. SUNY's concerned. The Board of Trustees, as you can see, has requested $5 billion in this budget. And the chancellor, after that was not getting anywhere, the chancellor said, well, all right, my proposal is then $2 billion just for critical maintenance. And that was zeroed out as well. So here we sit, $1.2 billion on this campus, waiting to see what happens. Ongoing concern, and one that looms overhead, and I don't know how much you've heard about this, SUNY Downstate Medical Center is in real financial distress. They acquired a second hospital, which exacerbated the problem. And by some calculations, they're losing something over $9 million a month in their operations. So the assembly proposed $50 million in aid and a $100 million loan fund rejected. And the upshot of that is that the chancellor has been asked to provide a sustainability plan submitted by June, so that would happen before the legislation went home. Basically a business plan. How are you going to rescue this, this operation? The Board of Trustees has also voted to close the Long Island College Hospital. That was that acquisition that was proven to be so unworkable. But that only accounts for something like $4 million of the $9 million, maybe $3 million of the $9 million that they're losing per month.
And they've been forced if that was overgrown. I mean, I think they have to reopen there. The unions protest. They said that the decision to close it was done in executive session, and there wasn't sufficient public notice. So,
but they did that last week in
purchase.
At this last SUNY board meeting.
Oh, that's done.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's done.
Yeah.
So it's closed again. It's now.
Or proposed to close.
Not closed.
Yeah, it's a court order stay.
Yeah,
we have to. Still. You guys would have to have a plan on file before they can actually close.
We have the plan actually now. So
you do.
So the big question for us is, if Downstate Medical Center is in the hole to the tune of $150 million, and there's no state money to bail it out, how does the university handle this? And the worry is that they'll pass the bill on pro rata to the campuses, and that would be a huge hit on our budget and our operating funds. So we're holding our breath, waiting to see if there's a solution that I was told in a telephone conversation this morning that Chairman McCall said, no ifs, ands, or buts. This is not going to happen on the backs of current students. We're not going to fix what's really a legislative problem on the backs of our other campuses or our students. So how far he'll get in sustaining that position if they can't come up with a solution, it just remains to be seen. But it's a worry for us.
So they voted to close Litch, Long Island College,
not downstate.
Just to be clear.
Close those other six hospitals in Brooklyn that are struggling.
So, we've already helped downstate, as you can see on the next line. We participated in providing downstate a $75 million line of credit from our cash reserves. Wondering how that will be paid back, but it sits there. If a viable turnaround thing is not funded, there's a risk that we might be at some financial risk. So we're holding our collective breaths, waiting to see how that plays out. So given what we know right now, that's pretty much a thumbnail sketch of what the state budget is going to look like for the coming year. Again, both houses will be in town for another 2 months, and I think more work to be done. So we may have an update for you by May about some of the outcomes here.
Questions?
I would have a question that, in respect to the council, if there is an opportunity that the council can weigh in as deemed appropriate, either through government relations or through budget or through SUNY or in support of SUNY or whatever, I would
stand ready.
I would think that we would.
I was going to have the same question as to, you know, one of the things that we are advocates, and I think we need to do that publicly. So the question is, how do we do that in a coordinated effort, both here, and it sounds like, you know, everybody is working together. Hopefully, everyone is working together in the whole SUNY system. But I think to try to leverage what you have around the table would be beneficial.
I do too.
Even beyond this table, really, as ACT,
right.
The Council of Trustees across the SUNY campuses, because we're all in jeopardy. It's not just us.
Right.
All of us. That's true.
Other questions, comments? Steve, thank you. Kathy, can you tell us about communications?
Busy first 86 days with the arrival of President Jones, and we, the Communications and Marketing Office, spent the first part of this time introducing President Jones to the campus. We organized a first day tour for he and his wife, Dr. Lynn Hassan Jones, and we took him to every corner of the campus, arranged different meetings with the faculty, students, staff to get the word out that he has arrived, and it was very interesting getting to know everyone. I was a member of the presidential transition team, and that work officially came to the end yesterday. And so now we are moving our efforts to external exposure.
Has he seen the tunnels yet?
There wouldn't be a tour without the tunnels.
Yeah, I think one of his first, actually the
but
first
did he
walk
run the
on
tunnels?
Campus yeah, exactly. I took with President Jones was in the tunnels, yeah. Because our television studios are down there.
Yeah, I don't need breadcrumbs anymore.
So. Because the climbs of breadcrumbs on the first day. So anyway, we have moved our attention now externally, and as you mentioned before, we are now planning a 9-county tour with the goal of having President Jones gain greater appreciation for the assets of these regions. And there's a certain criteria for each tour, which is educational, economical, cultural, and any recreational assets of the tour. Yesterday, we'll be doing this from now until June, and yesterday we visited Greene County. And already, it was just, a very productive day. We started off at the Greene County School District, and they introduced us to their principals. Two of them are alums, you all be alums, so we're meeting alums along the way. And they are just raring and ready to go to create partnerships with us. They want to, they have a very good international baccalaureate program there, and they want to establish a pipeline to send their students directly to UAlbany upon graduation. They are looking for, take advantage of our School of Education and teacher education programs. So as you can see, we had a very productive visit there. We then went to the Thomas Cole house where American art was founded. And this was President Jones' first introduction to the Catskill Mountains. And it was a splendid day, and he had some great views. And as you know, Greene County's economy is really based on tourism, the two ski slopes there, Windham and Hunter, and we were able to visit both in two different ways. This is another alum who is the head of marketing communications there, and she headed up the tour at Hunter. We were able to go on the sky ride there and get just a spectacular view of the region. So anyway, we will continue these, and I think that we were during that time. We will also take advantage of media opportunities. President Jones was interviewed on the radio yesterday. The local papers down there covered it. We have interest up here for WAMC to take ride on and do a radio news story from the bus tour, a future bus tour. So as we go along, there's going to be more and more opportunities for this both to talk about, tell the university story, and for President Jones to learn about the region. In between all this time, we were lobbying hard and creating communications for the capital plan, as Steve just introduced. We had a big forum here with business leaders and the legislative delegates. And well, we all know the end of that story, but it's not for lack of trying to get the word out about what our needs are. Then we had just a wonderful gift, a la Lee McElroy. And you know, these are the types of things that every communications and media office and development office, alumni office, just can't get enough of. You just want to take this thing and just bottle it and put it on the shelf and sell it. But we were able to, in addition to all the major media coverage that happened, you know, without our office, it happened because of the NCAA tournament. We were able to, and all the increased traffic to our website, we had overall homepage traffic spike 382% on the day of the men's tournament. It was just wild. A lot of the traffic was headed to the athletics, but a lot of the traffic went to the story, Lee, that was on the front page about the RNA, the student who is the track star, and the RNA researcher, and we had tons of traffic to her. So I think people were thinking about athletics, and so a lot of people, it was an opportunity to tell the story of our research and our stellar students. As Lee mentioned about how communications are really happening now, the big dance really equals big social media engagement. And it just went off the charts with the type of engagement that we had in all the different channels that we have for the university, because, you know, we have Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, Instagram. So the in Facebook, our total reach was about 334,000. We posted different things along the way. Again, average daily engaged users was up 300%, and our highest engagement was on with a single post that we put out. I think it read something about BCom beat Duke, and in one post got 110,000 different interactions with it. So it's just phenomenal, the power of social media, and it really is a direction that we're headed. And I must say that, you know, in our office, we have a person really dedicated sort of half time to that, and it's just an area that we really have to be looking at in the future, where we start doubling our efforts on, because the power of that is much greater than any of us in the room. In Twitter, we had we increased our followers by 264%. People started following us, they engaged, and I just wanted to put this list up here of all the different people who were in there contributing to the conversations, everything from, of course, media like the Times Union, the New York Post, he's an alum. But, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator, was tweeting us. And, you know, our Dan McCoy, our county executive, and Chambers, and you name it. I mean, it's just amazing. And this is just a little cross-section, because this is all my secretary can type on this list in this session. But it's just, you just get so much awareness from across the board. There's no really market segment that you're not touching. Again, we were able to advertise in both Delaware and the New York metropolitan market. And it was just one commercial. It aired at 1:15 in the afternoon, and they have these things called DMAs that they monitor. And we reached 96,000 viewers. And I really thank President Jones for coming through. It's like, it's very, you know, you're trying to do this very last minute, and I was just, thank you so much for your support that we were able to do this. Now, you know, we're shifting our focus. Like Dr. Jones was saying, we have an opportunity to leverage the New York SUNY 2020. I am on the committee, serving on the committee trying to formulate the rollout of all this. And in the weeks ahead, we'll be starting to implement a communications plan. We have been working right now on communicating it internally. There's a lot of different facts that need to be communicated effectively and accurately to the internal community, so as that we roll it out, there's not misperceptions about what we're doing. One of, you know, of course, we're going to be able to boast about increased faculty hires, increased enrollment strategies for doing that, and supporting enrollment efforts. Well, right now, we're working with the graduate studies department, and we are working on a campaign to promote graduate studies in the Albany area. So stay tuned. You'll be seeing a lot of that later this spring. And this also gives us an opportunity, as stated in the 2020 plan, to build on research excellence. And there's four areas that were noted in there: biomedical, forensics, data analytics, atmospheric science. What I wanted to show now, really, to kind of conclude this presentation, is that we have been working with these different areas to strategically to try and advance the messaging for what they're doing, and not only just about what they do, but also to strategically to help them build the business partnerships that they want to build and the collaborations that are all part of this proposal. So what you're just about to see is some of our efforts in getting the word out more internationally, and I've used atmospheric science as the example. So to get the word out, to help what we're doing to support their collaborations with business, and also to just educate the public on their different research efforts, and through that, we're able to get media placements. So the middle section that you're going to see about researchers doing climate change studies, we're just about to get a big story in Reuters because of this video. So I'm going to move on to that, and I'll just let the video in my presentation.
He's Professor of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences. And I'm joined by Skype by Chris Thorncroft. He's Professor of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences at the University of Albany in New York State, the state capital there. Probably going to get some of that storm a little bit later in the week. Professor Thorncroft, give us an idea about what makes this storm, this hurricane, special.
Okay, there's a couple of things. First of all, it is an intense hurricane. It's a Cat 2 hurricane. It's been moving up the coast along relatively warm waters for the time of year. But what makes it special is the timing with respect to a mid-latitude trough.
We know that climate change is occurring, but it's sometimes very difficult to actually feel or experience. But by looking at glaciers from year to year, how they retreat, we can visualize climate change. My name is Matthias Rüdig. I'm an associate professor, and I work in the Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences at the University of Albany. My research focuses on how climate change in the future over the next decades will affect glaciers, the size of glaciers, their extent, and also the meltwater that they can provide.
Just having the ability to have an open and unbiased communication line with faculty is incredibly valuable for us. John Blavin, I'm the CEO of Rivers Technologies, who provide forecast guidance for energy trading firms. Much of the research that's done here is perfectly supportive of the methods that we employ in our product where we take out the commercial industry. And some of the faculty researchers here, they really get it. We do a lot of work with different research institutions around the nation, and many of them are doing research for, in a lot of cases, just research for the sake. But the staff here really understands there's a real application for this research in the real world, and a collaborative communication line them and us, we can help them understand how small tweaks and methods that they're employing can have a much bigger impact to the broader market out there, as well as it really helps us to understand if we're going down the right road.
So that last video, that's the type of thing that our atmospheric science department can show other businesses, and it's like proof positive as to what our assets are.
Questions? Thoughts? Okay, thanks, Kathy. Pierre?
In the interest of time, let me first of all congratulate our newest member to ACT.
Thank you very much.
We have a director's call, of which Michael serves on, on the 10th of April, which will go through some of the appointments discussions that we've been having, the scholarships that we'll be presenting at our annual conference, which we'll be getting out recommendations from each campus. We had the University of Albany student one 2 years ago, and we hope to have, and again, congratulations on the university for 10 students who will be getting the Chancellor's Award for Excellence next week. The other points of interest is the conference coming up in October. You'll hear more about that, and I think I can cover the rest of it in the minutes from our conference calls, which we'll share with everybody.
Short and sweet. Any comments or questions? Okay, Fardeen.
Thank you. We are still creeping ahead of last year in our total dollars raised. We are 8% ahead of last year as end of March, end of February. At the end of January, we were up 6%. And this is a promising number because this year so far we have yet to secure a seven-figure gift. And so we have three proposals out for three seven-figure gifts. And what has made the change in increased dollars is with our, we implemented a new system, a new AVP for major gifts that came in, changed the metrics that the development officers are being measured on. A traditional model has always been the number of visits a major gifts officer has with his prospects or prospects for major gifts. Major gifts at the University at Albany is donors that are capable of giving us $25,000 over 5 years at least. What we did was we changed the metrics from the number of visits, which is usually 10 to 12 or 12 to 15, to the number of proposals submitted. And what we had noticed is, although many of the development officers were meeting their quotas for visits, proposals were not being submitted. And this is not to anyone's fault. They started seeing people who would see them. Now they have to think strategically, why am I seeing this person? Why am I meeting with this person? Is this person going to get see a $25,000 gift by the end of the year? So what that did was we actually had a 58% increase over the number of major gifts of $25,000 and up that we secured so far this year. And all the credit to that goes to the leadership of Larry Lichtenstein, which we just hired in June, and great major gifts officers that many of you work with day in and day out. And we tried to exploit our new president as much as we could. So we saw him. he was working for us on October 1st, not January 2nd. And so so that was made a change. And in December, if you recall, I was sounding alarms that my number of my donors are down. I'm down 690 donors. These are all $25 and $50 donors or $100 donors. And that's a significant number to be down. I'm happy to report we are actually ahead this year. And as suspected, it was all had to do with the 4 weeks that we suspended calling to our sweet spots, which was due to the storm here to Metro New York City. We recovered all of them, and part of it is we had our School of Business team had an ingenious idea of a fundraising campaign called the Pearl Campaign, personal URL. And what we did was that there was a fantastic video put together. We sent it to our School of Business graduates, and that they would go see this video as how their name would appear in the tunnel that goes from the School of Business to the podium, and you could type your name and you see exactly how it would come up. We were estimating we would get about $50,000 to $75,000. be well over $225,000.
What does it cost to put your name in there?
Excuse me?
What is the cost of getting your name in that tunnel?
$1,000.
$1,000.
Minimum $1,000. But we secured a number of $5,000 and $10,000 gifts. And one of the $10,000 gift was a person who has only given us $25 to $50 annually. So this has been one of the success we had. And another thing is I got a call from a couple of people admiring the timing of our direct mail. We did not do this on purpose. That the 80% of our direct mail hit the last Saturday.
Yeah.
You could not time that better. So we know we're going to get a good return on it. And also, Robert has been with us, Florida twice, Washington, D.C. We're going back to Washington, D.C. again, 18th. Lou Wiener is hosting an event, alumni event there. And New York City a number of times. And we're going to Boston later on, sometime in May. We are going there. So we are, and, the engagement is fully on. And also, we are discussing... very, very silent phase for a next campaign. And this is going to be a number that we're all going to be very, very proud of. And also, as far as UAlbany magazine, as most of you remember, last year you had it in your mailboxes around March 21st, March 22nd. It's in the mail houses, and you should have it by mid-April. So the production was delayed by about a few weeks this time. And this time it's going to 122,000. And I promised that somehow I will always find the money to send it to 122,000. This was a big loss when we didn't do that. So, and also, what we did was we purchased the list, and we are mailing it to as many young colleges and universities as possible. So for so we're kind of showcasing ourselves.
Arlene, what do you need from us?
Money.
I
and I'm not kidding.
Question. Better answer.
Thank you for your generous support, all of you, and thank you.
He wants $1 million gift.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need
you know, my seven-figure gift.
I've done that.
Seven-digit, right?
You know,
any
I didn't do
questions?
A million, so I'm behind the mark. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Jim Jackson on the line. I just want to know, we have an update on the acquisition of the old Albany High School, where we are with that.
I can do that one. James and Steve Bettis. The closing is set for, I think, April 15th. So we're good to own it. What's in jeopardy now is having enough capital to do the kinds of rehab that that we have planned in the short term. So we've got money in the pipeline to acquire the building, and now we need to sweat out the funds to get it in the kind of shape we need to get it in.
Okay. And my last point is that the smart track, that at some point in time I'd like to have some kind of update on our smart track program and how it's going at the University of Albany.
The financial aid, that would be the next time.
Okay. So we expect that to be at the next meeting.
Good.
That completes our published agenda. Yes.
Just two add-ons. Chocolate to and I forgot to pass out the ticket in the receiving, because I know last year there was some problems.
I got it.
The alum, did you get it, John?
We got it in the mail.
Okay, good. Okay, just wasn't sure. Just wanted to show you how
to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. I did not teach the women's team. They made it to the tournament.
We had that night.